The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Second hour of the Bible Study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Here's how you get on the program. You just call us at 505-7850 or toll-free 1-800-730-2727. You can come on. Join the conversation with our guest in this hour, Dr. Victor Belton, pastor at Peace Lutheran Church in Decatur, Georgia. Good morning, Pastor. How are you doing today? Everything good down where you are?
Good morning there, sir. It's a great day in paradise.
Great day in paradise. You got paradise down there in Georgia, do you?
Yes, sir. All is well.
I guess if it's warm here, it's warm there.
It is. It's a very, very nice day. The difference between here and St. Louis is we'll get some more nice days.
Yeah.
For the end of the year.
When winter comes at its pretty much at its worst down in Decatur, Georgia, how bad does it get? You get snow and ice down there ever?
A little bit. A little bit. Ice storms more than snow. And pine trees have a lot of moisture in them, and so they will freeze and snap. And it's a horrendous sound when a pine tree that's 2 feet around in diameter snaps.
Yeah, I bet.
Sounds like the earth moved.
So does everybody go crazy? Now, how about the cars, the drivers down there when you get ice?
Drivers, yeah. Ice. It's an oxymoron, my friend, in Georgia.
All right, Dr. Belton, I asked Dr. Belton before we came on if he would open up to Matthew 28. We just wrapped up our study of the Gospel of Matthew, and our thanks to Pastor Marty Springer from Trinity in Edwardsville for we actually devoted a half hour to this conversation on the Great Commission and still didn't get all my questions asked. So Dr. Belton has been gracious enough to he will entertain a couple of the questions that I have left over. The first one, Pastor, is from verse 20, the very last words of the Gospel of Matthew. Jesus says, "And behold, I am with you always, to the end of the age."
Yeah.
And there's somebody, maybe somebody that comes to your mind, who does not believe this to be true, or it does not feel true to them. They are in the valley, and they are looking for Jesus, and to them, he's nowhere to be found. And they feel very alone, and the words, "I am with you always to the end of the age," ring kind of hollow. Can you speak to that?
Surely. One of the main emphasis that we have right now around our little congregation here in Decatur is Psalm 121. And the picture that's painted there, "I will lift up mine eyes to the hills from whence come," and the question then, "Where does my help come from?" And so when we look to the hills and we look to the places where we have the expectation of receiving our help, we're very often left with the question, "I thought I was going to get my help from somewhere out of these hills. I thought I was going to get my help from the doctor, or I thought from the folks who would give relief to my foreclosure issue, or from the employer who was going to help me with my job, or for the banker. I looked to all those hills for my help, and the answer came, I'm still asking myself, where am I going to get the help that I need, because I can't get it from any of the hills I went to?" And the psalmist says, all my help, everything I need comes from the Lord. And it's faith in that word that even though I may not see it right now, even though I'm in the depths of depression, even though I don't feel like I have very much to cling to, I have this glimmer of faith that says, all my help comes from the Lord, because he made heaven and earth. It's a promise he's going to keep me. It's a promise that he doesn't sleep and he doesn't slumber. He's a promise that he's my shade on my right hand, and he's going to protect me from the sun that would smite me by day and the moon by night. He's going to preserve my coming and my going from this time and forevermore. That's a faith word, you know. And every once in a while, when you're in that place of despair, that dark night of the soul, you just need somebody to come alongside who'll just remind you and say, All my help comes, and all your help, truly comes from the Lord. And so, I look to the hills. No help there. So where's it coming from? The Lord who makes heaven and earth.
Dr. Belton, if memory serves me correctly, you have one child, is that right?
I have one young man.
Mm-hmm. One son.
Yep, one son.
And so that means you've had the parenting experience. Did it happen from time to time in your parenting experience that your son needed this or needed that, and you, for your own fatherly reasons, decided to make him walk a little bit tougher road than he's used to walking in order to get to the place where he was trying to get? Maybe what the Bible calls a little pruning?
Oh, sure.
You did that as a father, did you not?
Sure, absolutely. Especially in this area of these $90 and $100 tennis shoes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's like, son, I don't pay $100 for my own tennis shoes, and I work every day.
Yeah. So my question is, you know, I try to think about ancient peoples. Just get a little bit of a handle on history here. Even 500 years ago, before there was, you know, indoor plumbing, before there was waste removal, before there was air conditioning and forced air heating, and you know, if you didn't get a crop at the end of the season, you could starve. Not to mention the fact that some marauding tribe or people might come over the hill and slaughter all of your people.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that context. We don't have anything like it. And I wonder if it doesn't happen sometimes where some of us in this otherwise soft age compared to the rest of just about all of human history are sitting having a little pity party, whining about this adversity or that adversity, and the Lord looks down at us and says, yeah, you $100 tennis shoes, I don't think so.
See, I'm not sure that we don't have the adversities that are as real for us in our context as the marauding hordes coming over the hill in that former context.
Really?
Yeah, surely. Because in some people's minds now, when the stock market tanked, that was because some marauders came over the hill, stole all the value out of our stocks, and then left me with absolutely nothing. Took my capacity to care for my family, took my 401k, took the mortgage on my house, took all of my security, and where am I supposed to turn now that all of that stuff is gone? And so it seems that every generation has had, and our generation in the United States in this day, even at a greater level, these times when things happen that we have absolutely no control over, and they leave us without our security blankets that we had depended on. And when that happens, where do we turn? Where do we go? And can we have a faith that says, He said He's with me always, and He even said, you know, even in the adverse times, He's somehow, a la Romans 8, going to work it out for my good. Now, can I just hold on for a minute?
Sure.
And not take this thing into my own hands and jump off the nearest skyscraper and trust that God's going to really turn this thing around?
Well, okay, I'm struggling with that a little bit because I do not want to be guilty of minimizing the loss of somebody's wealth or fortune, something that they have responsibly and properly accumulated so that they can take care of their family and maybe even their grandkids. But that's not the same as having a bunch of barbarians come over the hillside and cut off the heads of your children and then move on to the next village. Those are two different things, it seems to me.
What? See, I'm in the mind of the guy who has always put all of his trust in his ability to produce and all of his trust in the capacity of his securities financial securities to provide for his wants and his needs. I think it's a very serious thing. I remember having a conversation with one of our parishioners who wanted to bless his daughter with an automobile upon graduation, and his problem was not that he could not afford an automobile. His problem was that he thought his daughter wouldn't appreciate him as much because he could not afford to buy her a new automobile.
Oh, yeah. That's
how twisted this thing is. And so for him, it was a major crisis, not because he was broke and didn't have money. It was because he didn't have the kind of resource that he thought he needed in order to provide for his family the way that he desired to. So I think in our society, this finance thing is a very, very, very serious issue for people in terms of our lifestyle and in terms of our security.
I don't know. I guess it's inappropriate for me to project my sensibilities onto Almighty God. I'm just thinking that, you know, for somebody who is dying with cancer and is calling out to God and is feeling alone, that the promise, "I am with you always to the end of the age," carries deep meaning. For the spouse who is kind of sitting in a heap saying, "Well, my spouse just doesn't understand me. I don't know if I can go on."
Mm-hmm.
Is you're saying that those things are equivalent?
In the mind of the individual who's experiencing it, I believe they would be equivalent. Because if you've put all of your hope in a person, or put all of your hope in your health, or put all of your hope anywhere other than in the Lord, then when those things fail and our help doesn't come from there, it's a significant crisis for the individual who is now left without their security blanket.
Well, you as the under shepherd, you as the one who is the actual fulfillment of the promise, "I am with you always to the end of the age," because, not because you're Jesus, but because you bring the word Jesus to people in the valley. Am I okay so far?
So far, I think so.
Do you ever find yourself in a position where you want to say, "Hey, you know what? You need to pull yourself together here and behave like an adult and stop feeling so sorry for yourself"? Is that an appropriate tactic for a pastor ever?
Yeah, I think there does come a time. There does come a time when I think pastorally we kind of say, you know, "Aren't you tired of being in that hole? I mean, you don't really have to live there. You don't really have to continue to live in that hole. I'm gonna lead you to the rock that's gonna help you resolve that issue, and upon whom you can stand to move out of that place and into a place of greater security and greater comfort in the Lord. I'm going to lead you to the rock that's higher than me, because I don't have any more answers for you. You have completely exhausted my capacity. So now let's rise up, gird up our loins, in good biblical terminology, and let me help you move to the next place." Absolutely. Man up is the term that my kids would use.
All right. My other question that I wanted to get from Matthew 28 and the Great Commission is in verse 18. Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." All authority.
Mm.
And we know what the will of God is. The will of God is for men to love God with all their heart, soul, strength, and mind, and to love our brothers as ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If all authority in heaven and on earth,
mm-hmm,
has been given to Jesus, why is there so little loving kindness toward God and loving kindness toward fellow men? As a matter of fact, it looks more like Jesus took his ball and went back to heaven. See you later.
Yeah, it's we want a God, I think, who's like us. And what that means is when you give me authority, see, I'll use it as a big old stick to beat you up with and to make you do what I want you to do and to beat you into the form that I want you to exist in. Our God does not use, Jesus does not use the authority that he has to make us conform to his desire and his goal, even though it's a higher desire and goal, perhaps the highest desire and goal to which we can attain. He still doesn't use his power to beat us up and make us love him, make us love one another, make us obey his commandments or anything else. We are left with that, with the capacity as free moral agents to do exactly what it is that we'd like to do against God and against his kingdom. It breaks his heart when we make a decision against him and grieve his Holy Spirit. But he leaves us with the capacity to do it nonetheless.
Here on our Ask the Pastor Bible study and on our other programs here at KFUO, we are in touch with a certain amount of surveying done by reputable people like Barna and Gallup and the Pew Research Outfit. Mm-hmm. And they all say that the association in various people demographics, the association with church is deteriorating. This is not an increasing thing, it is a decreasing thing. And there are more and more skeptics. Curiously, statistics don't show really a dramatic increase in atheists or agnostics. Mm-hmm. But does show an increase in the crowd that doesn't want to be identified necessarily with either, believers or unbelievers. Mm-hmm. When you get into a conversation with somebody who's in play like that, who has great skepticism and doubts about whatever it is you believe, Pastor, as a Christian, and you get a chance to talk to them, and they look at a verse like, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me," and then they look around them at all the devastation, the human devastation that's come from abortion and sexual immorality and pornography and violence and the whole business, and they look at you and say, "Are you serious? You actually believe that? All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me?" It kind of works as to discredit you, Pastor. How would you respond to that?
That absolutely. We believe that God, Jesus, has all power and all authority in heaven and on earth. But yet again, he has not used it in the way that human being that we would use it. He has not forced us to follow his paradigm, his program and design, just because he has the power and authority to do it. He's not standing up there with a great big old stick that awaiting to nail everyone who doesn't comply with his demands and commands, like we would be, like a policeman who's waiting for, who has a radar gun and he's got it trained on everyone who's coming down the local highway, and the first person that goes over the 55 mile an hour limit, he's going to stop and nail and give a ticket to. That's not how our God operates. Now we might wish that he'd operate that way, but then we'd all be in trouble, because we'd all be stopped at the border because we have all exceeded the speed limit. And so actually it's good news that he doesn't exercise his power in that way. You know what, another piece of that is that I don't think people are moving away from God necessarily because they don't attend church on Sunday morning. So what the conversations I've had.
That's
with
an interesting
people,
comment.
Pardon?
That's an interesting comment.
Yeah. So the conversations I've had with people who say, "You know what? I believe in God and I believe in Jesus, but I just can't wrap my brain around the organized religion thing." One of the things I said, there's nothing organized about us. We're about as disorganized as you can be. But you understand the point, that I'm not into organized religion. And I say to them, you don't really have to be in organized religion. God's not saving on the basis of I was in church last Sunday, which becomes a works righteousness issue. He's saving on the basis of faith in Jesus. However, at the same juncture, it is that there is strength and there is comfort and there's the security, I am with you always, that only happens in the midst of the community. And I say to folks, and you understand that, because when you have a crisis and you don't see where else you can get an answer, you immediately come to this community. So when your kids are acting strange and you can't answer it and you don't know what else to do with them, you bring them to the pastor. When they're foreclosing on your house and you don't have anything else to do, you come and say, Pastor, I need to talk. When your wife is or your spouse is acting up, you come and you say, Pastor, I need to talk. So innately, people understand that there's a time when they need a community. And I encourage folks, okay, so maybe you're not an every Sunday kind of girl, but you don't want to neglect this opportunity altogether.
One more question here before we get to the bottom of the hour. I actually asked this of Pastor Springer, but I'd like to hear your response to it as well. In the giving of the Great Commission, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell that this was not written by a Lutheran. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them what? Teaching them to believe and trust in Jesus Christ alone for eternal life and salvation. But that's not what it says.
Mm-hmm.
It says, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like, particularly if you have a kind of a legalistic mind, it almost sounds like, I got expectations, you got work to do, now get busy. Not getting into my heaven if you don't get busy observing all that I have commanded you. That's kind of how it sounds. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, teaching them to obey, to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you.
Does your text say obey?
Yeah.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always. Teaching you to observe is another word that gets there. Of course, God is just altogether sovereign still, and so He's worthy of our observance and obedience, and so that word from Jesus, baptizing, teaching, discipling, the observance are just part and parcel of what it means to be His disciple and a follower. I think out of love for Him, we do what He says. And Pastor Springer said, it's His love, our response. Otherwise, it becomes this work righteous piece that actually doesn't gain us or garner us anything on earth or.
Well, you know, Pastor, there are some people listening to us who go to works righteous churches. That's kind of what they teach. In their churches, they would teach just what I said, that the Great Commission here is a clarion call for everybody to get out there and start doing their good works.
Well, it is. But the motivation is the thing that is the question. Motivated because I've done a good work, so now God's duty-bound to reward me in some way, or I love God, and out of my love for Him, then I want to bless Him, and I want to do what He has said, and so I'm teaching folks to observe all things whatsoever Jesus has commanded because of the love that He's shown to me, and because of the way that my life has been prospered.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. I got to take my break. We'll be right back.
I'm Dale Meyer. Did you ever wonder what kind of pastor or deaconess will serve the good news to your children, grandchildren, and the coming generations? Prospective pastors and deaconesses regularly come to Concordia Seminary to consider careers in the Lord's service. Please pray for them. And please encourage young people you know to consider the ministry for their life's work. Thank you. If it's in the headlines, we'll think about it. If it's a topic of conversation at the water cooler, we'll discuss it. If it's something we need to remember, I'll remind you. Hi, this is Dale Meyer, inviting you to hear the Meyer Minute on KFUO Radio. Weekday mornings and afternoons, I'll bring you fresh commentary from a Christian perspective. The Meyer Minute, addressing today's topics the way God sees it on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
A sad and tragic discovery was recently announced. It came after a 7-month investigation by Michigan's Attorney General and Saginaw County Sheriffs. Two abortion mills in Michigan have been disposing of aborted babies' bodies along with the trash in a dumpster. 17 tiny bodies were found sealed in plastic bags. On them were clearly written the dates of the abortion as well as the mother's name. The gruesome discovery shows not only are they killing preborn children, they have no respect for their bodies or for the mothers. Links to the evidence are at today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org. I must warn you, it's very hard to look at. Still, it's the awful reality of what happens in abortion chambers in America over 3,000 times a day.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Beyond the Mosque, I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. President Barack Obama has praised Indonesia, the world's most populous Muslim nation, for what he calls its spirit of religious tolerance. Before flying to South Korea from Jakarta, where he lived as a child, Obama visited a mosque. The imam there noted that a neighboring Catholic church uses the mosque's parking lot during Christmas. In a speech later, the president said Indonesia is a nation where
people choose to worship God as they please. Islam flourishes, but so do other faiths.
The president noted that
as a Christian visiting a mosque on this visit, I found it in the words of a leader who was asked about my visit and said, Muslims are also allowed in churches. We are all God's followers.
Obama also emphasized that the U.S. is not at war with Islam, but with terrorists who he said have no claim to be leaders of any religion. I'm Steve Coleman.
When Jesus warns about the coming last day, he asks that your hearts not be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and the cares of this life. We can understand drunkenness, but who of us Christians are not concerned about the cares of this life? Does this mean that if we are concerned, that the day of judgment will mean we enter hell forever?
Weekdays at 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio.
Coming up this Saturday and Sunday at the Magic House, your prince or princess will have the opportunity to sip tea or apple juice, dine on fine pastries provided by St. Louis Bread Company, and enjoy a short live production of Cinderella inside the Whitaker Theater at the Magic House. Following the play, kids can see their favorite character up close as Cinderella, Prince Charming, and the Fairy Godmother visits with guests and signs autographs. This is all going on this Saturday, November 13th and Sunday the 14th at the Magic House.
You're welcome to join us here on our Ask the Pastor Bible Study, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest is Dr. Victor Belton. He is pastor at Peace Lutheran Church in Decatur, Georgia. I'm looking at the Associated Press Radio Wire today, Pastor, the print media that we have here from AP.
Can I finish off that Observe piece?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't let you finish. Go ahead.
This
absolutely.
This is going to be a terrible, terrible word. But we've constructed a God in some ways that is not. A false God that is just an idol that we've made in our image. We've made God after our own image, and so we'd like for God to be someone who would reward us on the basis of our works, because that's the way that we do other folks, and so that's how we want God to be. So some of us have constructed this theology about God being a God who wants us working. The danger in that is in Matthew 25, which is that story of sheep and goats, and also the narrative around having served God or not. And some folks will say, God, when did we serve you? Because we did feed some hungry and we did clothe some naked. And God will say, well, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these who belong to me. And other folks will come along, goats will come along, and they'll say, well, we did that same stuff. Why aren't you commending us like you commended them? Because we did the same thing. It's Cain and Abel. We both bought offerings. Why'd you accept his and not accept mine? Well, because it was not out of a faith born out of the observance and appreciation of the sacrifice that God had made, that God has made beforehand in Jesus Christ, his son. And so I think we've created non-gods to whom we sacrifice every day. And at the end of time, when God is separating sheep and goats, it's going to be a clear question. You fed somebody, but it wasn't out of obedience and observance of me as God and Father that you did it. You were serving yourself.
Very good.
That's dangerous.
I think you nailed it there. All right, I'm going to move on now. Did you know that you're a fine city there? Decatur, Georgia is in the AP Radio Wire.
Uh-oh. This, yes.
You kind of
got which thing?
You got an idea of where I'm going here?
Well, maybe.
Let me read this story to you from Decatur, Georgia.
Oh, goodness.
New Birth Missionary Baptist Church in suburban Atlanta has acknowledged that Bishop Eddie Long accompanied four young men on trips, but the church says it does not believe Long engaged in sexually inappropriate conduct with them. The megachurch filed court papers Monday responding to lawsuits alleging that Long used his influence, lavish trips, gifts, and jobs to coerce the young men into relationships. The church acknowledged that the men accompanied Long on trips, in some cases overseas. It did not confirm or deny a series of specific allegations against Long. However, the church said that it does not believe that Long or any of its agents or employees had inappropriate sexual contact with the plaintiffs. This is a story that I probably wouldn't necessarily have raised if it weren't for the fact that it's happening right there in your city, Pastor.
Yes.
Has it captured the attention of the people of Decatur, Georgia?
Well, certainly it has. New Birth is a major ministry in our town, and I want to be very careful because I got an Eighth Commandment issue. we all have an Eighth Commandment issue.
Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, well, I mean we need to defend our neighbors, speak well of them, put the best construction on everything, and so I don't want to speak presumptuously. On any level, I've met Bishop Long. He and New Birth do great work in Decatur and in the greater Atlanta community. And it's impossible to have that kind of exposure, 30,000 people, without having the enemy kind of stick his head in there and try to derail and confuse the issues. And so don't want to speak very much on Bishop Long, except to say in my experience with him, he's a man of some character and some integrity, and I've never seen anything in him that would kind of indicate those kinds of things. He has sent sons and daughters all over the world. In the years that he's been indicator. And he's been here longer than I have. I've been around for 20 years, and we've met him a while. And so just want to be careful about.
Well, let's be careful. I don't want you to talk about the church. I don't want you necessarily to talk about the bishop. What I'm interested in is you as a pastor at Peace Lutheran Church. Open the paper with some regularity, and there's another scandal in the church.
Yeah. You know what? One of my members just last night, we were having a Thrivent financial seminar yesterday evening, and one of my members came up and says, I have pictures of my children, church children, on my file cabinet, and when I look at them, they're graduating, they're playing football, they're all kinds of pictures there when they're children. And this member said to me, Pastor, I guess you need to take all those pictures down. See, that's a direct result of the bad press that the church is getting. And that's really heartbreaking for me. Because part of the things that I think a pastor is to do is to help nurture and help bless and help pray for and cover the generations that are coming, and I mean I just enjoy being able to kind of look over and remember, oh, that's Jordan, I think I'll pray for him, oh, that's I think I'll pray for her, that's Miss Howard, I think so it's difficult when those kinds of things happen, and it makes it hard on all of us that try to serve in the body of Christ. But that's what the enemy wants to do, right? He wants to make it so that the men and women of God have no capacity and no ability to reach in and to bless and to cover the coming generation at all.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's take a telephone call here. Well, it doesn't look like she's quite ready to come on yet.
Well, yeah. No. So I, after all said and done, Chuck, I don't know what I'm going to do with the pictures.
Yeah.
I.
You
got to
keep those
down,
pictures, Pastor.
Just as a way of.
Easy for me to say, but you got to keep those pictures. I think.
We've got them from generation. I mean, it's been 20 years. So
I mean, that's
lots of
the church's people, right? And it seems to, I mean, I'd much rather you have pictures of people up there than a sunset or a forest setting or something. I don't know. All right, let's take this telephone call and talk with Miss Harris. Hi, you're on the Bible study. Good morning.
Oh, hi. I just have a comment. I think sometimes that we get a little confused or about the fact that we see people in church on Sunday, because there are more people in church on Sundays than ever before. There are football stadiums full of people at church on Sundays. But we should be concerned about what people are doing on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that we need to, you know, we believe in Christ and Jesus and God, but we also need to look at people as human beings, because that's what they are. And I don't see a big change in the world and human beings just because they go to church. I don't see a big change in them.
Yeah.
All right. Any comments, Pastor?
Yeah. Thank you for that, Ms. Harris. You picked up on exactly exactly my point. I think I'm less concerned. I'm sorry. I'm less concerned about whether or not folks are investing 45 minutes or 50 minutes, or in our case, 90 minutes on Sunday morning, sitting in a place, and much more concerned with what people are doing Monday through Saturday and Sunday afternoon and evening. I'm in complete and total agreement that this Christ that we serve doesn't want to just be our Jesus on Sunday morning from 10 to 11:30, but wants to be our Jesus every minute of every hour of every day of the week.
Whenever there is a hint of scandal, doesn't actually happen to actually be proved yet, but whenever there's a hint of scandal in the church, the church opponents, people who are hostile to the Christian church, like to seize that opportunity, and maybe whether or not there is guilt involved or if the person in question is somehow exonerated, won't matter. This is an opportunity to run with it for a while and do damage to the church. Whenever that happens in some far distant city, it probably affects you a little bit. When it happens in your own city, a little closer to home, do you feel the power of it more, Pastor?
Oh, absolutely. If this had happened in Nebraska, I probably wouldn't have had that conversation with my member about removing the pictures off my file cabinet. And so absolutely. The other thing to know is that the enemy's been very, very busy in Decatur, because we've had three major ministries worshiping in the thousands of people, and all three of which have had leaders who've had public failures, as it were, in the last 3 months or so, and so it's they're like falling dominoes almost out of these large churches, and it's an interesting thing. There's a whole, and if you're not in a place where these mega churches abound like they do in Decatur and Metro Atlanta, and you wouldn't know this, but there's a whole culture that goes along with the mega church phenomenon. And so folks don't leave mega churches and come to Little Peace Lutheran Church in Decatur, because we just don't provide church Hollywood, as it were. The piano-based drums, orchestration, thousand-voice choir, and so they move, as it were, from mega church to mega church, kind of seeking that vicarious life the life that they live vicariously through the group think that happens in those mega settings. One of the benefits of being in a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation where you've got 150, 200 members on the rolls is that the pastor knows your name, he knows who you are, probably misses you when you're not there, may know all your children's names, can call them by name, your dog, the puppy, and so there's relationship that begins to go on.
Here's a headline on ChristianPost.com, Michigan School District halts Bible distribution. Story by Catherine Fan says a school district in southern Michigan is stopping a long-standing practice of allowing the Gideons to distribute Bibles in the hallways of its elementary school after a parent complained to the district superintendent. Jonesville Community Schools will no longer allow Bibles to be made accessible at a table in Williams Elementary School. Superintendent Mike Potts told the Christian Post on Tuesday that the district is not taking a stand on whether Bibles are right or wrong, but simply following regulations as a government agency. Potts said, "We cannot condone the passing of any literature of that nature, regardless of who's passing it out." For many years, the Gideons had been allowed to set up a table in the school hallway and allow students to pick up the Bibles. The latest distribution occurred on Wednesday, and by Friday, Potts had made the decision to end the practice after consulting with the district's attorney. "The next time the Gideons want to distribute Bibles, it has to be on the sidewalk or outside of school grounds," according to Potts. Is a good thing or a bad thing, Pastor?
I it's a good thing that they can still distribute the Bibles to young people that might have a desire to have them and currently don't. So that's a great thing that they can continue with that ministry. It's not so great a thing that we continue to build this false wall of separation of church and state. That is not in our Constitution. It's not there. I learned the 23rd Psalm in public school in Washington, D.C. every morning we said the Pledge of Allegiance, and every afternoon we said the Lord's Prayer in public school in Washington, D.C. Now, I don't know how it could have been okay in the 1950s and 60s, and this thing gets repristinated to a place where it's not okay in 2011. But here's the thing that I do know. In 1960, when it was okay, there was much more order in school and much more education going on than there is in 2011 when it's not okay. In 1960, when it was okay, there was a lot more discipline among the students in school than there is in 2010 when it's not okay. In 1960, when it wasn't okay, children weren't taking their life because people were so mercilessly bullying them like they are in 2010. And so, come on, guys, this is not rocket science. It's not hard to figure this thing out. I think if that were to happen in Decatur, Georgia, I think I'd lead the charge to the courthouse.
Really?
And I'd say, let's take this thing up in the proper channels and let's testify about what we know is the benefit of having the Bible available in school.
You see, this is the you've really hit the nail on the head in terms of the crux of the matter here, because this is not the same as a teacher standing up in a class in the year 2010 and telling all the students, the Gideons have brought Bibles, you must all come up here, you must all take one, and you must all read it.
Exactly.
That's one thing.
Yes.
To put them on a table out in the hallway, and the way this story is written, it sounds like if you don't want one, you don't need to pick one up.
Mm-hmm.
If you do want one, they're free to you to pick up. And I'm having trouble seeing what's wrong with that in a free society. But I guess my question for you, Pastor, is if the local council for Arabic, I can't remember the name of it, relations, wanted to put a table in there and fill it up with Qurans, would you be okay with that?
I'd have to be okay with that as well. Because here's what the Second Amendment, its first Second Amendment, says: Congress shall enact no law that restricts the exercise of religion. And so, yeah, got to be okay with that too.
Well, it seems to me that the liberty and the freedom of the situation that you just described is, at least to me, preferable. I'd rather have two tables, one with Bibles and one with Qurans, than no tables.
Exactly.
But apparently you and I are in the minority. I wonder why that is.
Well, see, I don't think we're in the minority. I think that we just don't take it to the level that we need to take it. There are a lot of churches. This was in Michigan?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, see, there are a lot of churches in Michigan, a lot of Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod congregations in Michigan. But I would venture to guess that none of them are going to challenge this proceeding. See, it is that government is the servant of the Lord.
Oh, now you've really gone off the deep end.
And so, yeah, I slipped off the page, didn't I? And so let's push on that. Let's push on that. It's okay for us to avail ourselves of the laws of the nation when it's in regard to how we function as church.
Let's get a phone call in here, Pastor, before we run out of time, and talk with Chet. Hi, Chet. You're on the Bible study.
Oh, yeah. It's been a real good discussion this morning.
Thank you.
Talk about someone. Pastor Dutton, I love your answers. You know, that's like Chuck always said, that's why you're the pastor, and I'm just a layman calling in with a question. But I've been trying to get a clear understanding on the issue of loving oneself. You know how in modern society people talk about self-love a lot as a motivational issue to achieve, and I know even at the second commandment in the Bible where Christ said we should love our neighbors as we love ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just, can you give me some kind of biblical perspective on that, Pastor Belden? I look at it as in the sense where in the world people, it's an egotistical or prideful thing.
Sure.
When people tell you to love oneself. So how do we evaluate that in the terms of a biblical understanding of loving oneself?
Thank you, Chad.
Yeah. See, what we get this love. Thank you, Chet. That's a very nice question, and thank you as well for your kindness in terms of our responses. One of the problems with the English language is we only have this one word for love, and when we talk about love, it most often has this connotation of erotic love. Me for this one and this one for me, kind of understanding of
emotional
love. and if we use that as the basis for loving oneself, then it turns into a form of idolatry and arrogance and pride, and I believe that's the thing that we would war against. And so in terms of the self-help pop psychologists, love yourself, that's an idolatrous kind of love, because I'm okay and you're okay, so let's all just get along. And I'm more okay than you most of the time. but the kind of love that the Bible talks about, I think, when it talks about us loving ourselves, is more of a self-sacrificing and giving love out of the love that God has first given us. Do you know that you're a kingdom and priest? You're a holy nation, a royal priesthood, a people belonging to God, that you might declare the wonders of him who's called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Now, when you love yourself on the basis of what God has said, that sets you free to love others on a basis that's above that erotic level.
You know, sometimes, Pastor Belton, psychologists, folks who sit on Oprah's couch and things like that will say something like, well, they're talking about forgiveness, they're talking about getting along, they're talking about minimizing the hostility that we seem to have in our culture these days, and they'll say something like, well, you know, you can't forgive others until you forgive yourself. So you're supposed to sort of begin with yourself, and then somehow that opens up the door to greater forgiveness for others, and maybe to eventually embracing God. What do you think of that statement?
That's exactly the idolatry I'm talking about. That's exactly the piece. Embrace yourself. Well, there's a word for folks that embrace themselves, and it's not a nice word. It's back to the hills from whence comes my help. I can't help myself. And so there's got to be something outside of me that's greater than me that will give me the capacity to both love myself, and out of that capacity then I begin to love others. And that capacity is born by Jesus Christ as he suffers, bleeds, and dies to set me free from myself so that I may actually be free to love and serve others. So that's a good question, Chet. Thank you for that one.
Do you wince when you hear somebody saying, well, first you have to forgive yourself, you have to love yourself? Do you wince?
Yeah. This pablum. And you know, the most frustrating thing for me in all of that, Chuck, is that people find it so appealing, because it's something that they can do, and the words sound so good. And we'd really like for life to be that way. And so people really embrace that nonsense and pablum.
Pastor, we're out of time. Thank you for the conversation. Always good to talk to you, my friend.
God bless you, my friend, and greet my folks at KFUO.
I will do that for you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Now, tomorrow the Bible study is going to be on the road. We're going to be down at Green Park Lutheran School, but we'll be there for the second hour, the Ask the Pastor hour. They have an Empty Bowls project going on down there. We'll talk about that and some other things. Roland Lettner will be the host of the program as we kick off our study of the book of Hebrews, the first four verses of Hebrews 1, with Pastor David Marth, tomorrow at 10.
You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.
Sacred and classical music has reflected the beauty of the Creator throughout the ages. The great heritage of the Church features this music throughout the centuries of Christian history. Join me weekdays as we explore and experience the great inspiration provided by countless composers. Music for your daily walk. The Essence, weekdays at 1 p.m. here on KFUO Radio.